Improve your construction projects with real-time insights direct from the site with Procore's easy-to-use platform. Learn more at Procore.com. Procore, software for the people who build the world.
It's Wednesday, the 10th of January, 2024, and you're listening to Reconstruction, the Construction Index podcast with David Taylor and Phil Bishop. Happy New Year, Phil.
Thank you very much. And to you, David.
Thank you. Thank you. First one of the year. Has it started well for you? The year, I mean, not the podcast.
Yes, it's been quite busy on the news front, and what's happening.
Good.
The weather is turn to proper winter, lots of rain, and although the sun's out today, it's just blooming cold and ice on the roads.
Yeah.
Watch how you walk.
Yeah, okay. Let's talk about some of the news that's happened in the last week or so, last 2 weeks, I suppose. There have been some interesting things happening. Not all of it good, not all of it bad. Do you want to kick off?
Well, I want to start off just a touch. This is not a construction story at all, but like everyone, I've been horrified by the post office story, the Fujitsu Horizon computer system, which didn't work, and all the sub-postmasters and postmistresses. Incidentally, quick tangent, why is there not a gender-neutral word for sub-postmasters and postmistresses? We still haven't used that, whereas, you know, we have waiting staff, and it's actors rather than actors and actresses these days. And yet anyway, beside the point. I've been aware of this story for a very long time because I'm a Private Eye subscriber, and they've been reporting all the ins and outs of it for at least 10 years, if not more. And it's amazing that it's taken a TV drama to bring it out. But I suppose, in a way, we shouldn't maybe be that surprised, because I was reminded of other occasions in which journalism just doesn't cut it when you want to get a response from the world. You may remember 40 years ago, 1984, Michael Burke on the BBC 9 o'clock news gave a really powerful report on the famine and the disaster of biblical proportions that was happening in Ethiopia. I mean, it's awful. But no one in this country really took notice until Bob Geldof got up and made a song with Midgeur and told them to take notice. And we had Band-Aid and Live Aid. And they were, this is terrible what's happening in Ethiopia. Michael Burke didn't cut it. He couldn't cut through. It took you know, pop stars to cut through.
Yeah.
And it's a bit like this. All the news articles that have been in the press about the Horizon post office absolute scandal didn't cut through it until you get Toby Jones and Hayley from Coronation Street on your telly to tell you what's going on.
Yeah, it's astonishing. I mean, as you say, I mean, Private Eye have been covering it for a long time, but I don't know what the circulation of Private Eye is, but it probably more than the Construction Index, but not that much more. but I mean, it's not just Private Eye. I mean, the BBC, I think Panorama ran a did a program about it. There was a podcast, there's a Radio 4 podcast about it. And so I think a lot of people knew about it and were outraged. But as you say, nobody actually got up and did anything about it, least of all the government, really, until the ITV documentary came out. Well, sorry, drama documentary. And that really seemed to galvanize everybody.
Yes. And Well done, the makers, writers, producers, people behind that TV drama, because it's worked. The other thing that came to my mind about this whole story, not only does it show how ineffectual and what a waste of space us journalists are, because we don't manage to achieve anything despite our best endeavours, it also made me think of how organisations will rally round to defend themselves. They naturally regard their survival and their self-defense as their first reaction rather than serving their customers. And it seems to me there are parallels with the whole smart motorways business.
Ah, there we are, yes.
Highways England as it then was, or Highways Agency probably as it then was, now National Highways, came with this idea of widening motorways on the cheap. And they said it's going to be great because it's going to be this technology which will detect any stationary vehicle that's stranded our technology will detect them and we'll in there and rescue them.
Yeah.
Even though the emergency vehicles, you know, haven't got a hard shoulder to get up to rescue them. Anyway, they thought, assured us everything was going to be great. As soon as people started getting, you know, killed on these, you know, smart motorways because they're stranded in their cars and everyone realized what a bad idea it was, Highways Agency, National Highways, said, no, it's great. We insist it's great. You know, we here's all our numbers. Here's our workings out. And it took an awful lot of hammering and bashing for, in fact, I still don't think National Highways think they were wrong as an organization.
No, I think they're sticking to it. Yeah, absolutely.
Fortunately, the program, we haven't scrapped the rest of the existing smart motorways, but there are no more being rolled out, which is a good thing.
No.
But I just thought the way in which organizations naturally seem to react against criticism and won't countenance the fact that they could be wrong, their technology could be wrong.
No, there's just a sort of a corporate instinct to just cover your ass.
Yes.
And, you know, and if you just keep denying any culpability, then people will, you know, at least you'll fend people off, keep them at bay for a while. And I think that's probably what happened with smart motorways. It's certainly what happened with the post office. Yeah, interesting parallel.
Anyway, that's not the biggest construction story of the week. No, the biggest construction story of the week is the sad collapse of Stuart Milne Group.
Mm.
Went into administration on the 8th of January. And this is obviously the first big failure of the year. Turnover of 172 million in its year to October 2022 accounts. And it was profitable at that stage. It seems part of the problem might have been our old friend, Modern Methods of Construction. Stuart Milne Timber Systems, its timber frame, which is not particularly a modern system, but anyway, it's timber frame subsidiary. It sold that business to Donaldson in 20...
A couple of years ago,
21,
wasn't it?
22?
Yeah.
And I think that the investment, my understanding from what I've been reading, the investment that they had put into building up that business had saddled them with a bit of a debt burden. And that it was servicing the debt when things, you know, interest rates went up and the housing market went down, that made things a bit difficult. And Stuart Milne himself, he's 73 now, but a couple of years ago he decided, and we reported it, they announced the fact, we reported it, that he wanted to retire and he was looking to sell the business.
Yeah.
And he tried in 22, didn't work, tried again in 23, didn't work. And so there were clearly question marks about the future of the company with the you know, sale not happening, and ultimately it just appears that it's become untenable, no way forward.
Do you think that that Stuart Milne is any way unique here, or do you think that other major house builders might find themselves in a similar situation and you know, follow them down that route into administration?
I have absolutely no doubt they're not unique. We actually reported today another Scottish company that went into liquidation or provisional liquidation in just before Christmas. This is a company called Merchant Homes Partnerships, which I confess I've never heard of before. It's only peaked at 21 million pound turnover, so a much smaller beast altogether.
Sure.
But the housing sector, I mean, you're more on top of the numbers of the housing sector than I am. So I noticed in the January issue of the Construction Index magazine, it's got a big sector analysis on what's going on. Now, admittedly, the numbers there are latest filed accounts, which are probably up to whatever they are, March.
About June 23, I think, is the most recent one. Yeah, yeah. Basically looked at the latest figures filed by the top 20. Actually, I say the top 20 on my list, Stuart Milne probably would have qualified for coming into that top 20 because its latest turnover is more than the Galliard Group, which is number 20 on my list. So, you know, these things are not precise. But anyway, overall turnover was up slightly, about 6%, and profit was only slightly down, about 5%. So it doesn't look like, you know, all the wheels are coming off or anything like that. But I think that we're going to see some a slightly different, or perhaps a fundamentally different picture this time next year, when we see the impact of things like, as you mentioned, the mortgage interest rates hikes taking effect, and the fact that this has slowed down output from the sector. And, you know, for the last 15 or 20 years, it's been house building that has really led the charge. And, you know, it's been the most profitable and the biggest sort of sector of construction in the UK. And I think things are beginning to change. I think we might see some, if not failures, certainly companies filing very different looking accounts this time next year.
But looking at your list, I've got that in front of me from the magazine in front of me as well. There's only two, three or four who have got results to whether it's June or March 23. Mm-hmm. Most of them are year ending 22, either October or December 2022.
Yeah.
And so that is only just taking in the time when, you know, Truss and Quartain crashed the economy and interest rates went up.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, 2023 was when it all, or end of 2022, and then into 2023 is when it all went south for the housing market, particularly with the, you know, interest rates and mortgage affordability and so on. And I think interesting that Persimmon put out a trading statement this morning saying that actually, while their completions in 2023 were 33% lower than 2022. So that's 9,922 last year, as opposed to 14,868 the year before. So nearly 15,000 down to just under 10,000. Actually, their 2023 completions ended up being higher than expected because of a bit of an upturn in the fourth quarter.
Ah, which interesting.
Is encouraging.
Yeah.
Only marginally. The expectation, they have been reckoning 9,500, but it's, you know, nearer 10,000, 9,900.
Yeah.
So there's some glimmer of hope there, I think, that maybe there might be a beginning of a recovery in the housing market. And interest rates should, you know, they're coming down.
And things should
get better. And, of course, with a general election coming up, the government will be doing everything it can to try and
that's true
manipulate the market however it can to make sure that happens.
And Keir Starmer is promising to get building again, of course, if he's elected this year. Again, in the magazine, we've got an article all about his plans for the housing sector. So, yeah, it's all up in the air at the moment. We'll have to wait and see.
Well, I don't know what more to say about Stuart Milne, but it's a sad business. I'm sure they won't be the last to go, but let's hope that, as you say, things level out.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, let's move on. One or two interesting stories have come out within the last week or so. Well, one which caught my eye, and it was a story that you posted. Can't remember exactly when it was up online. Let me see. It was
8th of January. This was posted. This is on Monday this week.
That's right. Yeah. This is about neurodivergence. Now, of course, I think most people know what we're talking about nowadays when people talk about neurodivergence, because it's a very much a live topic at the moment. We're talking about autism, or I think what you're supposed to call it is autistic spectrum disorder, Asperger's syndrome, ADHD, attention deficit hyperactivity disorder, that kind of thing. These are all, I think, other conditions as well, like loss of memory, I think, probably one of them. Anyway, I'm waffling now, but basically there was a survey done by the Association of Project Management, which I found this astonishing. 46% of professionals in the construction sector described themselves as neurodivergent, compared to 45% who said they were not. So basically, more than half of those who responded, I mean, 7% preferred not to say and 2% didn't know. Almost half of all construction professionals think that they have some sort of neurodivergent condition. They're on the autistic spectrum, or they've got attention deficit hyperactivity disorder or whatever, which is astonishing, because I looked into this, and there's a German scientist who blogs and YouTubes and all that sort of stuff, who did quite an interesting video on this. Apparently, the figures are that globally, it's estimated that about 1% of the population has a neurodivergent condition of some sort. And that's globally. But in the West, the proportion is much higher. And in fact, the UK is one of the highest. But even then, they reckon that in terms of diagnoses, these are people who have been diagnosed as having a condition. It's only 8-10% of the population. Whereas the Association for Project Management's survey found that 46% of construction professionals have some sort of condition. And that there has to be something wrong with the figures. I'm sure that can't be right, that there's such a high concentration of people in construction with some sort of condition of this sort. And what did you make of it?
I simply didn't believe it.
Okay, fair enough.
And I think that's why I reported it, because I thought, this is interesting, because it cannot be true. I just cannot believe it. If it is true, if it is a scientific survey and it's been properly conducted and it's truly representative of, we're talking about project managers in the construction industry, then there's something very interesting going on indeed. Mm. I have heard people with these conditions, particularly Greta Thunberg, I'm thinking of, too.
Yes, of course.
Talking about it as her superpower.
Yes.
And I can see that. And I think I've heard the BBC Nature chappy.
Well, David Attenborough?
Younger bird chap, who's also described similar terms. Chris Packham, that's what I'm thinking
of. I've
heard Chris Packham talk in similar terms. Hmm. And that there are, I mean, depending on the condition, as you say, it's such a broad term, neurodiversity, as to be not hugely helpful, but a lot of the conditions that it covers, embraces, have benefits as well as disbenefits.
Yeah, sure.
Now, if people with these benefits are being either attracted to or drawn into or leaning towards construction project management, that's fascinating. That's interesting. What I think is actually happening is that someone put it somewhere online, hey, we're doing a survey on neurodivergence. Click here to take part.
Yeah.
Which immediately, anyone going, ooh, that's me.
Ooh, that's me. Exactly.
And everyone who's not part of that that cohort will go, well, I don't really know anything about that. I'm not particularly interested. Mm-hmm. It doesn't affect me, Gov. I'm not going to click here. And therefore, you have a self-selecting sample.
Yeah.
And I just strongly suspect that it's been stilted. Mm. The whole survey has been stilted in that way, which just goes out. I mean, you know how many press releases we get from most of them are junk surveys, like, you know, most plumbers prefer coffee to tea.
Yeah, and that's typical. Oh, you know,
one in five take five sugars or something like that. Yeah. And their favorite song is Aerosmith's whatever. All of those are junk surveys.
Yeah.
This is purporting to be a proper survey.
Yes, it was done by a proper outfit, wasn't it? Yeah.
I cannot buy it.
I think also the fact that, as you say, not the fact, but the suspicion that the cohort was self-selecting is significant, because as you say, you've got high-profile individuals who are widely respected and admired, like Greta Thunberg and Chris Pack and people like that. I don't know whether they've been diagnosed as having Asperger's or ADHD conditions, but certainly Elon Musk apparently claims to have Asperger's syndrome. And apparently Simon Baron Cohen, who's a not as famous as his brother, but he's
Borat's brother.
Yeah, exactly, Borat's brother. He's a Cambridge neuroscientist or scientist of some sort. Came out a few years ago and said that he thought that Einstein probably was autistic. And I think there's grown up a movement, sort of neurodiversity movement, to promote the positive aspects of these conditions, which is fair enough. But I think also it's attracted people who have maybe struggled with certain things in life. Maybe they're shy, or they have difficulty organizing their lives, or carrying out tasks which other people apparently find very easy. And they think, well, I must have something special about my mental makeup that prevents me sort of being able to carry out these tasks or meet these expectations. And if they can find a reason, an explanation for the way they feel, then they will go for that. So I think a lot of people have actually actively sought a diagnosis for this, gone to their GP, been referred to a specialist, done a few tests and get the label. Yes, you have ASD, autistic spectrum disorder, or you have attention hyperactivity, whatever it is. And that provides them with, if you like, an answer, a reason they can put forward. In your report, you mentioned that the survey asked these people, these 46% of people who replied and said they thought they did have something. A lot of them have notified their employer. I think 96% of construction sector respondents said they have informed their employer of their neurodivergence. And I think that, you know, they want people to know, don't come down on me like a ton of bricks because I haven't met a deadline. I haven't met the deadline because I have this condition. And I'm not saying they're using it as an excuse necessarily, but they genuinely have a difficulty in carrying out tasks. And now they think they know why that might be. And so I think that there's been a strong tendency for people to go down this route and seek an explanation for something which they've struggled with for a long time.
But if it's so prevalent, particularly in the construction project management sector, we can't call it a neurodivergence then. It becomes the new neurotypical.
Yeah, that's true.
More than half.
Yeah, yeah, that's the new normal.
I'm different. Yeah. I mean, it all rather reminds me of the fabulous scene in Life of Brian when Brian's trying to get rid of the throngs outside his house to, you know, go away and think for yourself and stop following me. And says, you know, you're all individuals. And the crowd shout back, yes, we're all individuals. And one little lone voice goes, I'm not. And I've always rather related to that lone voice.
Yeah, that's a good one. I mean, there are critics of this sort of tendency. Having Googled it, I found one or two. There's a neuroscientist called Moheb Kostandi, who I think is an American, who's written quite a lot about this. He actually says that it's not helpful to promote the positive aspects. Because, I mean, somebody with Asperger's, for example, and you don't call it Asperger's now, ASD syndrome, might have, we all know about these people. Anybody who's seen Rain Man, the film Rain Man, will know that Dustin Hoffman's character in that has astonishing abilities of mental arithmetic. You know, he can see a pattern instantly. You empty a box of matches on the floor, he'll just instantly tell you how many matches there are without having to count. That sort of thing. So some people with these conditions have astonishing capabilities and considerable handicaps in other areas of their life. But they're not, that is not the norm. Most, you know, the thing is that most people who have some sort of neurodivergent condition don't have wonderful capabilities that compensate for the lack of the social abilities and stuff like that. I mean, I've got friends who have a daughter who's now 24, who is autistic and severely autistic. She has very little speech. She's extremely sensitive to noise and light, things like that. Everything has to be exactly the same. You know, it really does constrain not only her life, but her parents' life, because, of course, they're still looking after her. But she is absolutely brilliant at puzzles. She's astonishingly good at puzzles and patterns and painting. She's very artistic. But that, you know, that is great. But her life is very difficult because of the other handicaps that she has as a result of her condition. And this chap, Kostandi, says, you know, you shouldn't necessarily celebrate a condition if it handicaps you to that degree. And, you know, and also people who come out, people like Elon Musk, he's doing all right, thanks very much, you know. And for him to say, you know, oh, I've got this condition, tends to draw the attention away from people who have a condition that is a problem for them, you know. And so I think there are two sides to the coin. Yes, we need to respect these conditions. And the fact is that people who get a diagnosis, it's a proper diagnosis, you know, they're not making it up. We know more about these conditions now, and there are more people, apparently, we are aware that more people have these conditions.
But ultimately, if it's a spectrum, then we're all on the spectrum, but some of most of us barely register.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. So it's interesting, but I agree. Getting back to the survey, the APM survey, very suspicious of their figures, I'm afraid. Time to move on to another topic. God, could have gone on for ages about that.
Rebranding, another favourite topic.
Rebranding, yeah, that crops up quite a lot.
When companies change their names. We've got a company that's changed its name this week, to which I asked the question, why? What's wrong with the old name? And I had no reply to that. And I'm not surprised, because we all know what's wrong with the old name, because the old name, folks, is Artex.
Yeah.
David, tell me about the wonders of Artex, please.
Well, I don't. I wasn't really aware that Artex still existed, actually. But I mean, for those who don't know, people of our age, Phil, know what Artex is, because back in the 70s and 80s, every ceiling was plastered with the stuff. It seemed, you know, it's this textured. I don't know if it's a plaster. It's a finish. It's a coating, yeah, which is put on ceilings. I don't think they put it on walls. They might have done. But yeah, basically, I don't know why anybody would want to do it, but it creates this sort of swirly texture on your ceiling.
Well, it would hide defects.
That's why it was. Okay.
Hide defects. Cheap way of hiding defects. You own uneven lumps, you cover up with nice swirly patterny lumps.
Yeah. Okay. So they changed their name. They're now called, and first of all, Artex, the company, it's owned by one of the big materials groups, isn't it? Saint-Gobain. Okay,
Saint-Gobain.
Fine. Okay.
Yeah. Should clarify, we're talking about two different things here. There's Artex, the company, which is a Saint-Gobain subsidiary, which sells Artex, a product, as well as Gyproc, Thistle, Weber, I don't know that product, and Blue Hawk renders and coatings.
Sure.
I don't know how much Artex, the product, it still sells these days. I can't imagine it sells any, but hey, maybe it does. And the product Artex is still called Artex. They're not glossing over that one. But the company that sells the stuff, they've changed the name to, they've made up a new brand called, I can't find it. Where's it gone? Ocarno.
O-K-A-R-N-O.
Ocarno sounds like something Vic and Bob would say, doesn't it?
Yes, exactly. That's what I was thinking.
And so, of course, I thought, Ocarno, what's that all about? So I Googled it, having not had a reply from Artex as to why they changed the name of Artex. You know, what on earth is wrong with it? I Googled the word Ocarno. I put it into Google Translate, and out it came. It's a Slovenian word for ugly. So I duly
and perhaps
slightly mischievously reported that it was the Slovenian word for ugly. But we don't know whether any Slovenians were involved in the rebrand. And about 24 hours later, I had the PR man from Artex on my case saying, you don't need to say that. You don't need to say that. Anyway, it's not true. If you put ugly into Google Translate and look up the Slovenian for that, you get a different word altogether.
Hmm.
So clearly there are two words for ugly in Slovenian. And therefore, you know, we shouldn't mention this.
No.
So I thought, okay, I was being mischievous. I'll accept that. I don't want to fall out with anyone over my mischievousness. I'll take that out. So I took that out. And he said, oh, thank you for that. And another thing, he then came back and said, you said that Artex used to have asbestos. You don't need to mention asbestos. That's a horrible thing. It makes us look bad. Everything had asbestos in the 70s. We don't have asbestos anymore. You don't need to mention that. So I had to explain to him why it was, in the absence of any explanation from himself or from the company as to why they'd felt the name to change their name, I had to explain why it was that the Artex name had been completely devalued, why its brand value had dissipated/disappeared. It was because of, it's not only its association with asbestos, but also the fact that it's gone completely out of style, to the extent to which estate agents will, if you're trying to sell your house and you've got an Artex swirly ceiling, an estate agent will advise you to plasterboard over it, cover it up, do something, because you're going to struggle to sell your house if you've got Artex swirly ceilings, yeah, because no one wants that. Mm. I mean, that's how bad a brand Artex is now.
Yeah, it became a dirty word. Yeah,
and it's not got asbestos in it anymore. It's not. We're not suggesting that. But most Artex that's on ceilings around the country was probably put up before it stopped being made with asbestos.
Yeah, yeah.
So an awful lot of houses have still got asbestos Artex on their ceilings / walls.
I should point out, of course, that there are a lot of exactly. That if you don't disturb the stuff, then it's probably not going to do you any harm. It's rather like asbestos cement roofing. There's acres and acres of that all over the country, and you shouldn't panic just because you find that your shed has got an asbestos roof. As long as you don't start smashing it up and breathing in the dust, you should be fine. Mind you, if you do start smashing it up, you've got to wrap it, triple wrap it in polythene and take it to your local disposal depot. But
can you do that DIY, or do you have to get a specialist contractor in for that though?
Well, put it this way. I found when I cleared a bit of undergrowth in the back of my garden, a stack of asbestos, corrugated asbestos roofing sheets, which have been there for decades. And yeah, I phoned up the local recycling centre, and they said, oh yeah, well, you have to take it to a special depot. But first of all, you've got to wrap it three times in polythene. And it's difficult stuff to manhandle on your own. I don't know if I breathed in any of this stuff. I mean, so anyway, yeah, you've got to do that. But I didn't have to call in a specialist. I could do it myself. So I don't know if that's the same in every local authority, but that's certainly the same. That's certainly the case down here in North Devon. But yeah, it's this chap, the PR man for Acarno, is quite right. There were lots of other materials back in the day which had asbestos in them, things like ceiling tiles, for example, and can't think of anything else, maybe plasterboard, I don't know, but certainly Artex was notorious for that, and it became almost synonymous with it. And as you say, in the 80s and 90s, it was, if you saw Artex on the ceiling of a house you were thinking of buying, at the very least, you thought you could probably beat them down in price because of that. But alternatively, you just walk away because it was Artex. You didn't want it. So, yeah, it would have helped, I think, if they'd have simply responded to your first question and said, oh, we've changed it because it, the name doesn't have the ring it had once upon a time. But I think, whenever somebody changes the name of a company or a product or anything like that, my initial reaction is, why have they done that? You know, especially as usually the new name is nonsense. I can remember when, was it Tarmac Construction became Carillion?
Yeah.
I can't remember. Yeah.
Oh, no. There are times when things like that, that was different. It's because Tarmac split in two.
Yes, I know.
There was contracting business and split from the materials business, because Tarmac is inherently thought of as a material. Tarmac stays as the materials business. And so sometimes companies have to change their names because they buy a business but not the brand.
No, it's just the fact that they changed it to something which didn't mean anything anymore. Yes. I mean, that's, and that happens a lot. Oh, you could have loads of fun making up new words for old companies, but most of them are invented by some marketing wonk who, combines two exciting sounding names and comes up with something completely different.
But the first thing you should do is to put it into Google Translate to make sure it doesn't.
Yes.
I can't remember what the story is. There's a type of car. I don't know whether it's the, I don't know. There's a very popular, commercially successful car of the recent past, like the Golf or something like that.
Yeah.
Well, it's still going, isn't it, the Golf? Which had to change its name in Spanish, because whatever the name of it
was.
Yes,
well, that was the Vauxhall Nova.
Was that what it was?
The Vauxhall Nova, which in Spanish means Nova, means doesn't go.
Okay, there was that one. But there's another one which in either in Spanish or German or something meant small penis.
Oh, really? Picanto, maybe? I don't know. All right, then, fine. Well, anyway, beware. If you're thinking of rebranding, think very hard. Anyway, so that was that. What else have we got?
I think that's us for this week. We had a bumper episode last time to end off the year, so I thought we'll have a nice brief one.
Yeah.
Unless you want to talk about anything else.
Well, there was the last thing was, this was, I think it was a scoop of yours. You're talking about recent stories which have grabbed the headlines. Obviously, the Horizon post office one is very much in people's minds. The other one, which was the success of Luke Littler, the 16-year-old darts player.
Yes,
made it to the final.
This, shouldn't we?
Yeah, we should talk, because there is a genuine construction industry link here. Luke, I mean, anybody who's been under a stone for the last fortnight wouldn't know that Luke Littler is a 16-year-old Yorkshireman who is a brilliant darts player and made it all the way to the...
Lancashire.
Oh, God. Sorry. Okay. made it all the way to the final of the World Darts Championship. And sadly, didn't actually win, but he was up against a very formidable opponent. I mean, nobody knew who he was until Christmas, basically. And then he's all over the news. And you noticed that he was wearing a T-shirt with a logo embroidered onto it. And logo,
I don't think they're called T-shirts. I don't know what the word is. It's his uniform. It's his dart-throwing kit.
A darts shirt. a dart strip, and it had the logo of a company called Prestige Building Supplies on it. So you Googled them, and you found out that they're quite a small company, but
just a Rochdale builders merchant. And I'd never heard of them, and I thought, whoa, they've got value for money. They probably paid this lad about £200. I thought, and suddenly they're getting millions worth of advertising. Most of it completely wasted, because I can't, you know, if you've just got one builder's merchant store in Rochdale, there's not much point advertising to viewers in, you know, Rotterdam and Duisburg, or even, you know, Glasgow, Devon and Birmingham, because sure, they're not going to suddenly come running to your store. You know, advertising outside your own town is a bit of a waste. But hey, great publicity for this little builder's merchant, I thought.
Yeah, absolutely.
But then I discovered that they weren't just his sponsor. They're much more than his sponsor. The guy who owns Prestige Building Supplies, so the co-owner, a guy called Martin Folds, is also Luke Littler's manager. Mm. He set up a sports management agency a few years ago, about 5 years ago or so, and he's got 7 or 8 darts players on his books, ZXF Sports Management.
Mm.
And yeah, Luke Little is one of 8 darts players on his books. So this is his probably started off as a side hustle, but if he's got Luke Little on his books, I suspect ZX Sports Management is a much bigger kettle of fish than Prestige Building Supplies.
Yeah. Quite possibly. I mean, I imagine that probably he's provoked a deluge of media interest, which he wasn't prepared for. I mean, I've tried to contact the company, and I've spoken to somebody in their sales department, haven't been able to get hold of Martin Folds. I imagine that he's probably fighting off media inquiries with a shitty stick, because he probably wasn't expecting this sort of exposure. But, I mean, we get press releases all the time about companies sponsoring sports persons or sports teams and stuff like that. And as you point out, it's a local newspaper story. It's not a story for us, generally speaking, because, you know, it really has no bearing on the company or the way it's run or what it does. It's a way of raising their profile within a, you know, confined area, I suppose.
And ticking the social value box these days.
Yeah. So normally we ignore stories like this, but this is different, because it's a very small company and the exposure has been massive. So it's different. So an interesting one from our point of view.
And the fact he's not just a sponsor, he's actually the manager.
Yes.
And I wonder whether he will stay in the builder's merchant business.
Yeah.
You know, if the darts game becomes more interesting to him, we'll see what happens.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know how many people in the UK are darts enthusiasts, because, I mean, it's a game I always associate with pubs, basically. I don't think of it as being a sort of a spectator sport. Well, of course, I know it is.
Well, because of Luke Littler, they had more people watched this event on Sky than the semi-final and the final, certainly the semi-final. More people watched that than any other sports event Sky has put out other than football. So, you know, more than the Ashes, more than any, you know, rugby or racing or athletics or anything like that. I mean, this was a big deal because of there was this 16-year-old boy who, in his first match, he became the youngest player ever to win the World Championships.
Play in the World Championships. He didn't win.
No, the first match he won.
Oh, I see. Well, I see. Sorry. Yes. Okay. Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, he was the first person to play? No, he was the first person to win a match. I think so.
Right.
It suggests, that's what I read, it suggests that someone younger may have turned up and got knocked out in the first round.
Oh, I see. Right. Okay. Yeah. 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 Well, anyway, well, I don't know what's going to happen to Prestige Building Supplies. Imagine that, they're probably trying under pressure to get on with their jobs, seeing as they're probably not given a minute's peace. But anyway.
Anything else? Any other business?
I don't think so. I think I'll probably do for now, Phil. That's quite a mixed bag of topics to talk about at the beginning of the year. Another 11 months of this to go.
Looking forward to it. It's going to be a good year. 2024 is going to be a good year. Think positive, optimistic. Good things will happen.
Yeah.
Thank you, everyone, for listening. And from David and myself, we will be with you again in 2 weeks' time. But for now, cheerio.
Goodbye.
Thank you for listening to Reconstruction, the podcast from the Construction Index. To keep up to date with the latest construction news and headlines, please visit theconstructionindex.co.uk and sign up for our free daily email news briefing.